Right now, we're going to take a look ahead to the summer. Memorial Day fast approaching, with it the official start to summer and the vacation season. Tens of millions of Americans every year devote some portion of their time to roaming the national parks and experiencing the grace and wonder of our nation's natural heritage. What about the people for whom the parks are not a vacation, but a workplace? National park rangers have to tackle everything from lost children to acquisitive bears and sometimes much stranger things. Retired Ranger Jim Burnett chronicled his service in his new book, Hey Ranger, True Tales of Humor and Misadventure from America's National Parks. And he joins us today in Studio 3A. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
We want to invite your phone calls as well. 800-989-TALK, 800-989-8255. Tell us about your adventures, misadventures, joys, and otherwise in the national parks. And if you're a ranger or have ever worked in the parks, we certainly want to hear from you as well. 800-989-8255. So, Jim, the title of your book is Hey Ranger, and I understand that can mean a lot of different things to a park.
That's
ranger.
Exactly right. Rangers all over the world are often greeted by that phrase, but the way those two words are said can convey a world of different meanings. It could be, hi, how you doing?
Yeah.
It could be, help, come over here quick. Or it could be, oops, I sure didn't expect to see you here.
I suspect you've developed an ear over time for the one you run toward and the one you run from.
That is correct, and a lot of body language goes with those as well.
And I guess whether you're standing or not.
That's,
you know,
exactly
but
right.
You've got some wonderful stories in this book, and I guess one of my favorites is the one about the dead rattlesnake.
Well, a lot of interesting adventures with all kinds of wildlife, yeah, are listed in this book, and sometimes people look at snakes and they may have a different impression about what the situation might be about critters. And I have some advice about snakes. I said, first, just leave them alone.
Yeah.
If for some reason you can't do that, then don't pick it up. And if you're not able to follow that rule, then certainly don't pick it up by the tail, because that leaves the business end free to do what snakes like to
do. You
know,
that's advice you would think you just don't even have to give. But I guess you do, huh?
Apparently.
Don't pick up snakes. But now tell us the dead rattlesnake story, the guys who thought it was dead on the water. And
This took place at Lake Bead National Recreation Area, just below Hoover Dam. And the water there is very cold because it comes through the dam at a very deep depth, right, from the lake. And so if a snake, which is a cold-blooded reptile, and that does not mean the same as a cold-blooded killer, but a cold-blooded reptile gets in that cold water, it eventually gets into a state of suspended animation. And these two fishermen saw a snake float in the river, assumed it was dead, flipped it up into their boat, and went back to the business of fishing. And the snake laid there in that warm boat, and pretty soon we had a revival of sorts. And at that point, those two guys decided that that boat was not big enough for the two of them and the snake. So a couple of visitors flagged me down and said, hey, Ranger, we think there might be a problem upriver. We found this boat drifting along unoccupied except for a rattlesnake. And so thankfully they had their life jackets on and they were able to make a safe swim to shore.
Did the snake catch anything? Or?
Well, by the time I got there, the snake had disappeared, and I decided it was a better part of valor not to beat the brush looking for a possible corpus delecti of the snake and just let it go its own way.
It really is the problem for a ranger. You've got this habitat that is really now designed for animals, and we invite these bipeds in to take a look. And that's your problem, isn't it?
That's exactly right. And, you know, for a lot of people in parks today, the great outdoors really is a kind of alien environment. What they know about the outdoors is what they see from perhaps a TV show, watching a video, maybe talking to a guy at the water cooler at work, and perhaps he's only seen the video as well, but they assume he's an expert. And so people can get themselves into some interesting scrapes out there. I've got some acronyms that I have fun with through the book. A lot of people find themselves into a oops situation. The oops is outcome outside of planned scenario. And those come up fairly frequently. And a lot of times people do some things that they would never dream of doing at home. And in retrospect, they say, boy, wonder why in the world I did that. But it's just because they're in a spot that they're not accustomed to.
Give us some examples.
An example would be things that people do around wild animals. A lot of times they assume that, I guess they're in a zoo, and they get too close to animals. You know, dancing with wolves was a great idea in Hollywood, but it's not a very practical thing to do out in the real world. Yeah. And I've also applied the term cubs, C-U-B-S, to people that seem to be determined to get up close and personal with animals. That stands for constitutionally unable to behave sensibly. And A picture may be worth 1,000 words, but it's not worth 1,000 stitches. And well, so stay away from the animals.
Stay away. And part of the problem, I guess, too, is that this is a protective environment, a protected environment for the animals. So bears tend to be a little more tame, maybe a little less fearful. They're not as sensible as they might be in this environment.
Sure, that's true. They become accustomed to being around people. And the same is true of many other animals as well. I've got a chapter in the book called Don't Feed the Skunks. Amazingly, people in a number of places are determined to feed skunks. And then when they run out of Oreos and the skunk is not through snacking, you can have some difficulties. And so stay away from the critters and don't feed them, and you'll have a whole lot better visit in the park.
Now, how did you, 30 years, you've got, probably 40 stories a day. How did you pick which ones to put in the book?
Well, we just tried to sit down and distill the ones that seemed to be the best. A lot of these have been told around the family dinner table for years. You know, every ranger over the course of his or her career says many times in the aftermath of some bizarre situation, somebody really ought to write a book. And we sit around and we tell these tales, and so we just tried to pick some of the ones that seem to have the most universal appeal.
How about for you? Any particularly scary times for you?
Well, certainly there are those unusual situations when maybe you're out there at 2 a.m. on the lake trying to find a lost boater, and it's real dark, and the wind's blowing 40 miles an hour. Those are a challenge sometimes. Some of the rescue situations can get to be an interesting situation. But the key is to be trained and stay calm and see it through, and it's a great... great experience.
We're talking to Jim Burnett, who is the author of a new book, Hey Ranger, and he's a retired park ranger. We're taking your calls at 800-989-TALK. Donnie's on the line from Portland, Oregon. Hello, Donnie.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I did not read the book, but I just wanted to know what the author's experience is in terms of his training and dealing with things like illegal poaching and illegal activities that go on in the parks. I know there's been an increase in that, and I just wanted to get his comments on that.
Rangers do a whole variety of jobs in parks, and not all rangers perform what we call protection or law enforcement duties.
Mm-hmm.
But those that do go through an intensive law enforcement training program at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center down in Glencoe, Georgia. And then each year we're also required to go through at least 40 hours of what we call in-service training. And we focus on some specific tasks at that time, including some training from folks who particularly handle the kind of question that you ask about.
Thanks for the call, Donnie. I suppose it raises questions these days about even national security. These are big, wide-open spaces, some of them abutting our borders, I guess. Is that now a concern and part of the training for rangers?
It's a big concern, particularly along the southern border of the U.S. That's a real challenge for some of our folks working there. Our rangers are shorthanded, and national security has put a real strain on some of the ranger ranks, because when you have an increased security risk at places like the Statue of Liberty, for example, maybe you have to shift staff there from other parks temporarily. Mm-hmm. And so people have to fill in and cover those gaps. So that's a challenge.
Talking to Robert Burnett about his book, Hey Ranger. And Robert is on the line from somewhere in Utah. Where are you, Robert?
Hello. I'm in southern Utah in a little town called Escalante.
Plenty of national parks there.
Oh, yeah. Lots of federal land around here. I was a seasonal interpreter with the National Park Service for about 13 years. And I can get tons of humorous circumstances. And very rewarding ones, too. Bears in Denali, glaciers, the Kenai Fjords, lava flows, and so forth. And all these natural occurrences and phenomenon that I've been able to see, and wonderful resources, and it's sometimes presented me with a puzzle to represent certain federal policies that I may disagree with personally. Mm. So I guess that's just my comment.
Well, thank you for the call, Robert.
Yeah.
800-989-TALK is the number to call. We want to get your experiences on. If you've had an experience in the park, Dawn is on the line from Micklinville, Oregon. Did I get that right or even close?
Micklinville.
All right. That's not too bad. Hello, Dawn.
Hi. First of all, I just wanted to say thank you so much for writing this book. I've been saying for years someone should write all this stuff down.
Great. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Well, my experience is I was a volunteer interpreter in Rocky Mountain National Park for several summers, and I just had to share my favorite question that I got repeatedly, and that was, at what elevation do elk turn into moose?
but seriously, at what? No.
Yeah, yeah. So that was was one that I got, and I could, again, go on and on, but you've covered several in your book, I'm sure, so I'm looking forward to reading it.
Thanks for calling, Dawn.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
800-989-TALK is the number to call if you want to join our conversation, have any experiences in the woods, either as a ranger or perhaps as a camper. I guess part of the problem, too, for the ranger is that he's sometimes seen, or he or she is a law enforcement official, and it's not always sort of the friendly ranger. Do you ever have problems with people who are trying to get around you?
Well, certainly that's a certain element of park visitors are there for reasons that we'd prefer they not be there. The vast majority of people come for great reasons. They have a wonderful visit, go home with wonderful memories. And the rangers that do the protection duties are there to simply protect the park resource and protect those visitors that want to do the right thing. And thankfully, that's not a big issue in terms of the vast majority of folks that are out there. But rangers are prepared to handle those problems when they do come up.
So as you get ready for the summer, we're talking today about life in the summer parks with my guest, Jim Burnett, who's written a book called Hey Ranger, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Frank Stachow, sitting in for Neil Conan. You have a number of funny stories in here. I think another one of my favorites was when you fooled a group of hunters who came in. They were trying to get some information about how much they might get away with, and you came up with a pretty clever ruse. Tell us about it.
Well, you know, it's always a kind of a cat-and-mouse game when you have the folks that set out in advance to do the wrong thing. This was in one of those newer National Park Service areas where hunting is allowed under a permit. It was a national preserve, not a national park. And they were in signing up for the permits and trying to fish for a little inside information about how many rangers happened to be there on duty. As it turned out, we had obtained a supply of some empty ammo boxes from military sources that you can use to store gear in to keep it safe and dry when you're out in the boat. And we thought we were going to get a dozen, and we ended up with 12 dozen. And so we had this big mountain of ammo boxes stacked against the wall of the office, and one of these hunters said, "How many guys you got working here?" And we just couldn't resist. We said, "Well, you know, we're not sure, because we've had a lot of new folks come in here lately for the hunting season, but when they go out on patrol, they take one of those boxes with them and then bring them back." And they eyeballed that stack of 124 boxes and kind of looked at me a second. That's one of the few times I could have been a successful poker player, because we kept a straight face. And they knew their leg was being pulled, but they weren't sure quite how much. And we kept them a little off guard for a while anyway.
That was pretty good. Bill is on the line from San Diego. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I am a military helicopter pilot. I wanted to relate an experience, kind of a sad story, actually. I was tasked with carrying a park ranger from Death Valley around to kind of familiarize him with his environs. And we came upon a black van that was located several miles off the main road in Death Valley. This was about September. We went down and got the vehicle identification number, and the van had been reported stolen from a rental agency. It turned out it had been rented by a family from Europe, I believe it was Germany, had been visiting the park in July and had gotten quite a ways off-road, apparently blown all four tires. At that point, it became speculation that they may have attempted to walk out of the park. There was never any evidence found of what became of them, but all the speculation was kind of morbid.
Mm. And so and you never did find them, but you say you took the ranger out by helicopter?
Right. And again, just to kind of familiarize him, show him what was taking place in his park, such a large area that they needed to travel around by air just to see all the stuff that's going on there.
Thanks a lot, Bill. Do you ever get to
And that brings up a great comment that it's really important when people go out to park to be sure they have good information. Now, guys, this is a time where you just have to stop and ask for directions, just break down and do it, even though we don't like to do that. But good information is essential about what you're going to encounter. Every park is different. Different seasons of the year pose different challenges. And clearly don't have time to go into a lot of detail, but at www.heyranger.com, there are links to a number of sites to give some good safety tips. Links to the official Park Service website. Each park has its own website where you can get great details. And that's a real key. Know what you're getting into. Be prepared for what you're going to find when you get there so that you don't find yourself in that kind of situation.
Larry is on the line from Arkansas. Hello, Larry.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I was just wondering, how does one become a park ranger? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, Larry.
That's a rather lengthy and complicated question. You need a college degree and a lot of luck. There's a group called the Association of National Park Rangers has put out a great guide about that process. Again, there is a link to their website at heyranger.com. If you'll go there and link to their site, there's information about how to order that brochure, and they can give you some great details about it.
Any physical restrictions or requirements?
There are, particularly for those who are doing what we call emergency services. Those requirements have gotten a lot tougher in recent years, and that's a job that can be very demanding. You've got to be in good shape if you're going to be able to get the job done, and so that's certainly a factor.
And I guess you get posted to parks all over the country. That would include Alaska. That's south of the toward our southern border. So you've got to be able to put up with, I guess, all kinds of different conditions, right?
You certainly can. One of my more bizarre changes was we left Montana in December and went to southeast Texas the year that they had the hottest summer in 75 years. So you do have to be a little bit flexible in that line of work.
And you're married, so your wife has to go along with you?
She goes along, and the spouses and families of rangers are some of the real unsung heroes of this profession. They put up with a lot of things, and they pick up a lot of slack when we don't have enough rangers to do the job. The spouses answer those phones and man the radios and answer those midnight knocks on the door and do a lot of things to help keep visitors safe and give them a good time at the park.
You have much say in where you go?
You do now. The system now is that when a job is open, an announcement is circulated, and people who are interested apply for it. Back when I first started, you moved around about every 2 or 3 years, but that got to be really too expensive. And so it's now pretty much your call if you find something you're interested in.
Jim, thanks a lot.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Jim Burnett is author of Hey Ranger, True Tales of Humor and Misadventure from America's National Parks. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.